Hi, I'm Kirsty Rice, and I am totally crap at podcast introductions, but I'm reasonably good at expat life and travelling with kids. This is my friend Nikki Moffat. Hi. We're the two fat expats, perhaps a little bit literally or maybe even metaphorically, but mostly because we believe that expat life should be lived large. We want you to fill it up to the brim until it's overflowing. Nikki and I are serial expats.
Yep, I've lived in four countries over the last 14 years, which has meant I've climbed Kili in Africa, played tennis in the deep American South, surfed my way around Durban while mastering dumplings and banking in Hong Kong. I can speak taxi Cantonese, I can add some hard R's when needed, and I'm currently touching up my high school German, and I do have a dirndl in my wardrobe.
I've lived in seven countries over the past 17 years and have managed to have a few children along the way. Four kids, four different countries, and I haven't broken one of them yet. I still can't pack a suitcase properly, but a few career highlights have been protests in Jakarta, backyard monkeys in KL, and making my way around the funky cold Medina in Libya. There's been bumps and hurdles in my expat life with chemo in Qatar and boarding school for big kids, but we've made it. I've finally found an online gig that allows me to travel. Only took me about 12 years. Easy, really.
And that's why we're here. Each week we talk about expat life and try to find solutions to expat questions. Now, let's get on with the show.
Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. And how are you today?
I'm good. I have all my family here with me at the moment because the girls are home from school. So I don't think really I could be any happier right now. It's a good week. Yeah, you know, I was driving home with the kids last night and, you know, lots of giggles and silliness. And yes, there is still fighting. I do believe I did hear one of my children tell the other one today, I hate you, and I hope you noticed that I didn't tell you I hated you yesterday just because it was your birthday, but I still hate you today. But having said that, when we're all together, it just feels good, you know, and I've realized that we are all at our best when we're all together.
Oh, that's so lovely. Well, I've got someone home today too, who I wish wasn't here with me.
That would be your husband.
That would be my husband, who has the man flu. You may remember I had a cold for a couple of weeks, so finally it's made its way to the other side of the bed, and it's not looking happy.
Okay, so we, of course, Nikki, have our Facebook group, the Two Fat Expats Facebook group, and each week we usually kick off the show when we talk about what's hot in the group, and there were quite a few rippers this week, but wow, the conversation, Singapore, Hong Kong, bit of background, Inca put a note on the Facebook group saying, yesterday my hubby got offers from Singapore and Hong Kong, both for jobs. Packages are about the same, so the choice is tough. I'd appreciate some advice. Maybe someone who's lived in both places. She mentioned they'd been in Qatar for the last 5 years and that they didn't have kids and weren't planning to, and that she would be working there. But wow, gee, that's almost a what's better, New York or LA or Sydney or Melbourne. I reckon that's it, actually. I think that's it in the expat world. It's Singapore or Hong Kong. 47 comments later and lots of opinion. Now, Nikki, you lived in Hong Kong. What did you think?
I did live in Hong Kong and I spent quite a bit of time in Singapore with work. So I traveled there quite often and I spent lots of nights in nice hotels and also visited Singapore. And also visit Singapore for recreational purposes, holidays and such.
And all those nights in those nice hotels, it wasn't because you were a hooker, it was because you were a banker, right?
Well, yes, okay, good point. So I can only speak from one side, but we used to say in Hong Kong that Hong Kong is where you live and party, and then when you grow up, you move to Singapore. And that was my mantra, and that's what I believed. But I couldn't believe, Kirsty, how many people had lived in Hong Kong and Singapore that were commenting.
Yes, and I hate them all because I love Asia and I want to live in Asia. And I have to be honest, when Inka's comment came up and she said, two job offers, Singapore or Hong Kong, I was like, seriously? Come on. I just want one of those.
And you said you spoke about it with a group of girlfriends one night last week. So what was that discussion about?
Yeah, that was really interesting. Last Thursday night, I had my girlfriend Pip's farewell. She is a serial expat and she has lived in Singapore. But there was a huge diaspora, I would say, of expat women. And yeah, that's when I realized too, oh God, this is a really touchy topic because people tend to feel quite passionate. I guess, short answer. Singapore seems to have this reputation for being a sterile and grey and, not as exciting as its sister, Hong Kong. Whereas Hong Kong, people quite often describe as the New York of Asia. It's sexy, it's a little bit more, if you were to believe the hype, that there's, culturally, there's a bit more variance and a bit more hot and happening. I don't know, Nikki. I haven't lived in both. I've only visited both and had friends that have lived in both. And to me, Hong Kong seemed to have, it was a bit more on fire. It's got those four seasons. I've been to Hong Kong when I've worn jeans and a jumper and it's been cold and foggy. And I've been to Hong Kong where I've been so hot. Whereas in Singapore, I've just been sticking hot the whole time.
And wet or dry.
Yes, yeah, or wet or dry. And it is one of those countries, I lived in KL, so we used to drive to Singapore for weekends. But so similar things in weather, where one minute you're walking down the street and then you've just got to take cover because there'll be this massive downpour and then it will just disappear and go away again.
The other thing about Singapore v Hong Kong is that wine is very, very expensive in Singapore.
Yeah.
That's on your list. So it is much more expensive in Singapore than it is in Hong Kong. That's one of the things that quite a few people brought up.
I agree. You'll be drinking a lot more cocktails in Singapore, won't you? You'll be working out how to
Because you
maximize
might
your
as well.
usage of gin and vodka because it's cheaper to do. When I went back to Jakarta a couple of years ago, I remember that is all of a sudden no, that's right. I don't order a glass of wine. I order a gin sling or a whatever because it's actually cheaper in the long run. Yeah. A lot of well we had some interesting ones and I don't want to rehash absolutely everything in the group, but I did think it was interesting when people were saying they thought it was easier travelling out of Singapore. Would you agree with that?
Well, I don't know because I didn't live there. I think the same, like you had mentioned, that you can drive to KL and you can catch a ferry to Indonesia, and that's all very close and close by. But I feel that Hong Kong was also very easy to travel to Asia and Southeast Asia from as well. So I am a Hong Kong girl, but as I've said before, I don't think I could ever go back. But it is one of my favorite places on earth. So I find it very hard to look at this discussion, but I would live in Singapore in the future. So,
Oh God,
I don't know.
yes. Yeah. And I think Katie made a good point when she was saying about Singapore that English is widely spoken, Western foods are widely available, you can get almost anything here at a price. She thought the lifestyle was fantastic and safe, that it was a great expat scene. I think transport is an interesting one, isn't it, when you compare the two? Because
Yes.
in Hong Kong, people tend to put their 8-year-olds on the train because it's so safe to get to school and travel on the, now it's not the tube, what do you call it
It's
in
called the
Hong Kong?
MTR.
The MTR, that's right.
Or the little green taxi buses, little green buses that go everywhere as well. So they're also like mini buses that go round and kids jump on those as well.
Yeah, which is fantastic, isn't it?
And taxis, loads of taxis, and apparently there's Uber, although I'm not familiar with how that's working out in Hong Kong. I don't know if it's still there.
Yeah. It was Katie that said, I've heard lots of people call Singapore Asia Light, which, is like the reference of diet. Coke and diet light. And I agree. I think Singapore gets such a bad rap for that because people do. They say it's sterile and it's not hard. And, you know, because you're not really getting down and dirty like you are if you go to Bangkok or go to Jakarta or, you know, any of those cities, that it is very clean and very, very safe.
Yeah, and I think Hong Kong's very similar. I mean, it might not be as clean as Singapore, but it's also very safe. And it's a great compact. I think they're both compact, easy places to live.
But I do want to make it really clear that I would be very happy to live in Singapore. And I think I may have said that 20 billion times when I was there in October. Is this, it made me, I missed it. Like, I missed it so much, Nikki. Asia gets under your skin. And I just love it. And I think that whole, that feeling it gives you, the smell, everything about it, I just missed it. And I sat there, you know, I remember got straight on the phone to my husband and was like, I want to be here again. Do you know, I love this. But, you know, I've moved on. I've got past it until the next person gets on our Facebook group and reminds us that they're getting moved and green-eyed monster comes back out again. But yes, okay. moving right along.
So talking about moving, Fiona Morris, who we know likes to iron her clothes while she listens to the podcast, moved to Ho Chi Minh City in August. And at the time she shared with the group that she was waiting at the airport. Now, in Ho Chi Minh City, you can't drive. You have to have a driver. So a lot of companies provide drivers to the family. So she was at the airport and she texted the driver and she didn't know whether he was going to be able to answer her or speak English. And she replied, and he replied and said, yes, I'm here or I'm coming. And she was very relieved. So that was her first experience touching down in Ho Chi Minh. And then she shared with the group this week that after 2 months, almost 2 months, with this truly wonderful man who was never late and always knew exactly where to go and who my children adore, is gone. Through no fault of his own or ours, he's going somewhere else, and she's gutted. Gutted because she didn't know, gutted because he'd gotten to the stage of him knowing our routine. She felt she could leave her toddler in the car with him while she nipped into a shop, but mostly gutted because she realized he's the main reason our move has been so smooth, because he made it all a lot easier. And I've probably spent a lot more time with him than I have with my husband. And I know there's plenty more drivers out there, but this one was special. So she didn't think she'd be saying her goodbyes already. So I thought that was very lovely that she came back and sort of closed the loop on the story with the group. And also that, you know, sometimes when you move, you don't realize that something is making your move more easy, or you latch onto something that's easy and you just sort of stick with it. And it just, it's a bit of a lifeline, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it just goes to show those relationships that you make at the beginning, why they're so important to you, because you're depending on people and so incredibly grateful for any sign of friendship or, you know, that whole kindred moment that you have when you're traveling with people. Yeah, could not agree more. And I think that gets lost. I think a lot of people look at your expat life and maybe think about the girlfriends you might make or the school friends you might make, and they don't realize that there's lots of other people in your day-to-day life that become entrenched in your experience of that country. And we all have those people in our life, Nikki, that we think of with great sadness. Yeah, that it was such a huge part of my life, and you were such a huge part of my life, and nobody will ever understand it, because they'll maybe see it as, oh yeah, but you were paying them to do a job, or, you know, they were staff or whatever. Well, no, they're not. That's not how it is, but it's very, very hard to explain to someone who's hasn't lived it.
That's right. Maybe one day we'll try and talk about that a bit more on the podcast.
Okay. There was another one from Karen about Skyping with family and friends. And I was very impressed with Karen, because she'd come up with all sorts of ideas to entice her kids to Skype, and that some of the things they'd done is emailed grandparents with family word lists in advance to have them do spelling practice with kids, or have kids read their readers via Skype with grandparents. And they'd also had Skype dress ups and had kids do their music practice via Skype with family. I'm incredibly impressed because I haven't done any of this, and I've been an expat for 17 years with two sets of parents available, and I've not done it. But it appears lots of other people have, Nikki.
Yeah, lots of other people have, and that's awesome. And I knew someone in Hong Kong who would, because of the time zone, and it's time zone dependent as well, what works best for you. But she used, her children used to have breakfast with her parents every morning via Skype before
every
they went to
school. Morning?
Yeah, pretty much every morning. And that's great because that's obviously the kind of relationship those guys had, and they just sort of turned on, and the computer was at the, on the table, and they just still sat around talking. So it was like they were participating in their breakfast. But I have always found Skype with my kids so bloody hard.
Excruciating.
Like they'll come and they'll put their head in, and you know, you set up, you say, oh, we're going to Skype with Granny, and you spend all this time arranging it, and then they pop their head in for 1 minute and then they're off, they're gone. And you know, which is why I thought these ideas were so, so good.
Yeah, they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. I love the music practice and the book reading and whatever. And I also think it'd be interesting to ask Karen how old her children are as well, because I think we did a lot of that I've possibly kind of forgotten about when our kids were really little. I've got lots of pictures of them talking on the phone to Granny rather than Skype, and I've taken the pictures because they look so hysterical, right, because they're little people trying to be big people. But when it came to Skyping, it was excruciating, with because you could see that the kids said what they wanted to say and then they wanted to go. And maybe that's it. Maybe Skype doesn't have to be a 10-minute exercise. It's allowed to be a 2-minute exercise for young people or little people as well.
Yeah, that's true. But I think I liked Amber. She often does it in the bath as the kids are contained and quite young. So
yeah.
I thought that was good. So she just, quick, look at Granny while you're in the bath.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good one. I thought it was lovely that Karen said that her musical nana, who lived in another city, would send cassette tapes of stories and songs way
That's
before
beautiful.
Skype.
That's beautiful. That's
which
beautiful.
I thought was very lovely.
I love that. I think there's actually a service that does that too, where grandparents can store stories for people. I need to look into that. I will report back next week, but I'm pretty sure there is some sort of service where you can get your family to record stories and history for future.
Yeah, that rings a bell, and I think everyone should do that. Rachel also said that years ago, before Skype, her parents made a video of themselves reading books to her son, which is very sweet.
That's gorgeous.
So but that's good Skype tips. Good Skype tips.
I'll
pass them on to my kids.
For anyone who is feeling guilty that they're not doing that, though, I'd just like to share a little story that may make them feel a little bit better. Because I was talking to, who was I talking to about this recently? And they said they just didn't feel they had the time left with their parents because their parents were a lot older and they wanted to head home because they were, you know, they figured their window was getting smaller. But what I was going to say is, obviously, my kids have never lived in Australia and my parents live in country Australia. And so we've always counted ourselves lucky that on the trips that we went home for an extended period of time. So my parents got to, you know, and we stayed with my parents often, so they got to spend a lot of time with them. But obviously, it's still not the same. And we weren't doing the Skyping. We weren't doing the music practice over Skype. We weren't doing any reading of books over Skype. And really, when I think about Skyping with my parents, it's me talking to my parents, you know, not so much my kids. And there's wine involved and a lot of giggles and a lot of chat about football. But I digress. What I wanted to say is, just recently, a few weeks ago, my eldest daughter, you know, my two girls are at boarding school now, my eldest daughter got sick. And there was some sort of fear that maybe she might have had influenza B, and I think I mentioned it on the podcast. But in a heartbeat, they were on the bus to Granny's. Like, one was going, so the other one just hijacked the whole trip and she went with her under the guise of looking after her. Yeah. But they were home to Granny's. Granny picked them up from the bus stop, fed everyone, made sure everyone had a good sleep, you know, looked after everyone really well. And it was just this immense feeling for me in that my kids haven't had their granny in that way for all these years. And I'm sorry, Nikki, if I'm making you sad, because I know with your mum that no. This is not easy. But it was for me just to be able to see the full circle, you know, of my sister now drives to the city, picks them up, takes them out. They have a meal, they go to the footy, they go and do something. My parents have the capacity, you know, to have them for the weekends and they spend a weekend with them. They're all close. They text, you know, they talk. So don't, I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you're feeling great guilt that you're not seeing your parents all the time and that you are away from them, don't despair, because time seems to march along and then, you know, things change. What seems is so desperate, you know, when I think about my days in Libya or my days in Canada where I felt a gazillion miles away from my parents and felt they were missing so much, it's all worked out. They have a great relationship with my kids. So don't panic is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, that's a good story though. Mm. I like it.
And the last one was that really hit me, and I wanted to ask you this, Nikki, was about your kids. Suddenly, you know, you always thought you were going to be mummy or mum, and then you go and move somewhere and you become mom or mama or what, something else. Erin put a comment about that, about how it was sort of, she was struggling with her children changing what they called her. Have your kids changed what they've called you, and do you struggle with it if they have?
Well, they tried. They did try, and I beat them. I beat them back. So we lived in South Africa where they say the word mum, but they spell it M-O-M. So I was just all for explaining. And I've been all for explaining in all the places we've lived. I don't care how you spell a word. Just put O and U together. And I don't care if the teacher marks it wrong. You should really spell words with extra vowels. So that's what I have always said to my children. And I don't care if they change their accents. I don't care anything they do, but I really do like them to call me mum. I don't have any preference for their father. He can fight his own battles. But mum is what I'd like to be, and mum is what I am, and mum. And I fought that battle. My daughter tried to change it when we lived in America because she wanted to be like everybody else. And I have to say, I felt strongly about it, and I changed it. Now, I know not everybody that commented on this did feel strongly about it, but I did. I'm through the worst of it now. What about you, Kirsty?
Yeah, I can't
You've
deal
got more
with
kids. More options.
Yeah, I can't deal with mom either. And you know, there's nothing more disturbing than the Mother's Day card that comes home from school with mom on it. I think it's amazing.
Your children go to an American school, right?
Yes, they do. They do. Yeah, but it has its kind of, they say mum, and it, you know, obviously now the big girls are back in Australia, they spell mum that way as well. And I'm now entering a phase where my children think it's hysterically funny to refer to me as Kirsty. And occasionally if I'm not listening to them, that's their last resort, is Kirsty sort of thing. Yeah, my daughter thinks it's really funny to call it out across the supermarket or somewhere somewhere where I can't beat her. But yeah, I wouldn't have. I love those, the German mama, and you know, though, that the papa and the mama. So yeah, well, I don't know. The only one I couldn't do was mom.
Well, my husband calls his mother maman, and he always has, and he's not French nor is she.
Wow.
But he has always called her that. And I mean, he calls her mum too, but he calls her the mama most often. So yeah, I don't know. So I don't have an issue with those other words either. Now, my mother, as a grandmother, she was mama, and because her maternal grandmother was mama when she was born. So I was, you know, when kids start speaking, they say mama, mum, mum, mum.
Yeah.
They kind of mix it all up. I really didn't have an issue with that, but my ex-sister-in-law did. So she would let my mother be called mama. So anyway, just throw that in there. She'll never hear it.
I love names like that, though, that were created out of little kids saying something. I had a Pammy as my grandfather because my sister couldn't do Popper or get anything right in that regard, and she came out with Pammy, and he was just P Pammy, always Pammy, called himself Pammy in the end, signed his cards from Pammy. Like, it was just so cute. I loved it.
Well, I was the oldest grandchild on both sides, and my grandmother used to say to me, "Hello, Nikki Nunu," and I used to say, "Hello, Nunu." So she was Nunu forever and ever.
Oh, yeah, love it.
And all my grandparents had names that weren't grandparent names. My other grandmother was Marty, and my grandfather was Boompa. So I had
Okay, hot topic of the week. Why did you become, or why are you, an expat? So, Nikki, we had a question in the group about someone who was looking at a teaching career, and they almost seemed a little surprised about the package, and they were asking questions about the perks and the packages of being an international teacher, which I think is a whole other podcast on itself, and maybe that's one of the ones where we delve to. Wouldn't it be great to have the inside story of expat teachers, and they can all tell us their horror stories of all expat parents?
Yes. Let's write it down.
Yes. Anyway, but I was interested because she was asking about, you know, different perks and packages. And I thought, why do we choose to become expats? And what are some of our main motivators? And it prompted me to ask a little poll in our group. And, you know, one of the interesting things, Nikki, with expat women is the amount of women still that move for their partner's career. While there are many, many travelling, and I notice I said travelling, not trailing, but there are many travelling spouses who travel because of their female partner's career, that it still seems the majority is male dominant careers, you know, that are going. I think in our group we said there were 223 people that said they were prompted to move because of their partner. They were all answers from women who were saying that about their male partners. And then we had 99 that said adventure. Now, I think when I moved, Nikki, for me, I was pregnant. And so while my husband and I were both working full time, I knew I was going to have to take a small amount of maternity leave. So that was in the back of my mind. It was also, we were saving to buy a house, and we realized that if we were expats, my husband's salary, with being tax-free by going to Jakarta, that we would effectively, with the bump in his career progression, we would still effectively earn the same without me working. So that was enticing. It was career progression for him, which in hindsight I think we looked at a lot, but probably didn't really think about what that looked like for my career progression. We might have got lock on a bit with his. And I think if anyone is interested in this, you need to read a book called The Wife Drought by Annabelle Crabb, because I think it's just a fantastic book, but it's very good at showing you why you need to think about that as a woman, is that, you know, quite often we don't think about financially, you know, we make all these decisions financially without thinking about the long-term financial factor.
Yes, and that's my Anne Marie Slaughter book also covers that kind of stuff too. So, but The Wife Drought, I totally love. I think it's a great book.
Oh, I read that book in 2 days on the treadmill. I loved it.
Interestingly enough, Kirsty, I was on maternity leave when I became an expat. So that's a similar story. We looked at it. We had always talked about living overseas. When I was 7, my parents packed up everything they owned, and we came to Europe for a year and lived in a camper van and traveled all around. So, and we'd always sort of had great sort of overseas adventure holidays after that. So we had always, and I'd done a year overseas after uni, so I'd always wanted to live and work overseas. So when the opportunity came up with my husband's job, we said yes, we'll go. So that's kind of the reason that we went for the adventure, but also because my partner's role prompted it.
Nikki, I wanted to ask you though, like you were saying about you were on maternity leave and that you had always considered traveling because you'd done it with your parents. In your mind, when you considered traveling, do you think you were always thinking, oh, it will be my husband's job that moves us? Or were you thinking, well, I could move with my job? Because I think if I was going to be really, really honest about where I was at in my head, I think my husband was far more driven with his job. Do you know, he was working in an industry where it was a possibility. When I first met him, he said, I want to be an expat. His parents had been expats. Do you know, he had almost chosen his career with an expat life in the back of his mind. So it was very much his thing. And I have really spent the last 17 years working out, all right, well, how am I going to do what I want to do working around this? So what was it for you?
Yeah, look, I don't know that my husband had that kind of career. It just was a luck and situation. So as I said, we talked about living overseas because we both wanted to, but we didn't really have a plan of how to do it. Yeah. And before we had kids, there had been an opportunity in the US, which, and my husband has loved US sports as long as I've known him. So he was so keen to do that. And it didn't kind of work out. So we sort of just went along our merry way. And then this came up when... So we had an agreement in our house that I was going to have 6 months off on maternity leave and then my husband was going to have 6 months off. That was the deal. He had it signed off by his work. It was all very advanced for those days. And we were happily considering it. And then I had the baby. And then and then they said to him, well, you could have the paternity leave or, you know, there's this. So it just was situational. It wasn't really planned. He's not, probably didn't go into it with the same mindset as G, but it just worked out that way. So yeah. I'm pretty happy it did.
And then we have people like Jen, who wasn't factoring in anyone. She said she bought a one-way ticket and that really that's managed to keep her sustained for the last 10 years. She said she thought she'd run out of places she could legally work, but it's been 10 years and she hasn't run out of anywhere to go yet. So, I mean, we have to remember, you know, within the group, we've got a lot of singles and we've got a lot of women that they were the instigators of the move as well. And then Sarah Derrick, the lovely Sarah Derrick, who... was here with me for the first two seasons of Two Fat Expats. She pointed out that she had a whole plethora of reasons, but she said pregnancy hormones had made her apply for a job pretending to be her husband. And
it's fantastic.
I know. And I have a girlfriend that does the same thing. Like she... You know, while you would on the outside look that it was her husband's career that was moving them everywhere and that's how the decisions were being made, she's very much, she picks up jobs everywhere she goes and yes, it is usually his job that gets them there, but she applies for jobs for him on his behalf. And, you know, when they were here, she decided, I'm sick of living in Qatar, I'm going to go and find my husband a job somewhere else. And she did. She started applying for jobs for him and then he eventually got interviews and she very much made it happen. So I think, you know, when we're thinking about when people say, oh, you know, I moved for my husband's job, you also have to remember that maybe that's very much a joint decision as well. Kirsty, who said hers started out as a way to travel outside of Australia, then she married an American and it was his job that moved them, because we've got to remember we've also got a lot of expats in the group who have become expats because of they've moved to a different country and married a local.
Become love pats. The love pat.
The love pats.
I did love Maretta's response though.
Oh, yeah.
So she said, I was surprised to find this question so hard to answer. I would say initially it was career progression and travel. But now after 20 years as an expat, it just seems like a more interesting way to live. Living as an expat doesn't feel like traveling. It's just living in a different place. Love that. Love it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I think I might have written back to her and said that's exactly how I feel too, is that... It is. It's just a way of life. And, you know, I think I was lucky enough to spend about 20 weeks back in Australia last year through a few healthcare stuff and kids starting school and building houses and whatever. So I did get a good vibe for being back in Australia. And, yeah, I love this expat way of life.
When you were there, what did you think? Like, did you feel like you could move back quite easily or... you just made it made you more committed to your current lifestyle?
I think it's a really interesting thing that whenever you first go back, if you've had a long break away, for me, there's usually that feeling of, I love this, this is so easy, you know, like the whole going into Coles or Woolworths, like the supermarkets, and shopping is easy and getting your mail is easy and driving from A to B feels easy and everything's familiar, you know, if you need to ring anything, do anything, organize anything, it just feels a lot easier because it's all what you're raised with, and you see all your friends and you're so happy to be back and they're so happy to see you and you have these great lunches and catch-ups and dinners and whatever, and it's all very exciting. But I think what's interesting when you spend a long time at home, because a lot of people go home and they only get that excitement and that they leave kind of thinking that that's how it is. But when you're there for a long time, you suddenly feel everything go back and you suddenly start to have the same conversations with people, and you know, the mundane comes in and suddenly you've got to clean all the bathrooms and, you know, the septic tank breaks and you've got to get someone in to fix it and the car breaks down, you know, like life starts to become normal again. Yeah, and you think, well, this would be it. If I come back, this would be it. And I think it was Kira who said in her comments that they chose to become expats because they chose to leave suburban life, that they were sick of mowing the lawns on weekends and both working two jobs to pay the childcare and, you know, having to do Friday night supermarket shopping and, you know, all those things that you forget about a normal suburban life. And we have done a couple of locations that have felt very local suburban. I think when we went to Canada, it felt like that. I was driving the Dodge Caravan to take the kids, you know, to soccer and soccer practice and music class and all of that, and living very much in the burbs, and I was back working full time. And I remember that did cross my mind of, I'm not living much of an expat life. I'm kind of just living an at-home life, but in a different country, if that makes sense.
And then how did that make you feel? Did you think I might as well be in Australia, or did you think, yeah, no, I'm going to keep doing it anyway?
Yeah, no, I did think I might as well be in Australia. And I think because I was really stuck in the grind then. I had 4 children under the age of 6, full-time work, paying, you know, for kids to be in international schools. Do you know, like I was... There was no glamorous expat life, put it that way. We had no money. We shopped at Superstore. Our big Saturday adventure out was we used to buy a box of Timbits and go to the airport and watch the planes land.
But still, you could do things like go to the Stampede and all sorts of things that you could never do, drive across the prairies or go to the Babs.
Oh, absolutely.
You could never do if you lived in Australia.
Absolutely. And I look back at those events with great melancholy of, you know, driving through the Rockies and going to Vancouver to get a visa and, you know, all those things that are nifty. I think you forget those things when you're in the rut and you're in the mundane, for sure. But I think it's timing too. That was one of our longer posts since we were there for 4 years. So maybe it would have been a little bit more exciting if it was 2 years. Maybe we overstayed it. But then, you know, we go back to this whole thing, Nikki, of you're always happy wherever you are because of the experiences you're having there and whatever. I wouldn't give up any of my time in Canada now for the friends that I made and the experiences I had.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. So one of the things we don't like saying about becoming an expat is that we don't like having to say that I'm here for my husband's job. A lot of people find that a difficult sentence to get out of their mouth. I don't enjoy it.
And do you know why you do? Like, how does it make you feel if you say, I'm here for my husband's job?
Well, it kind of makes me feel like I'm not relevant. And it sort of takes me back to, it just makes me feel like I don't have a part in it. When I know that in our household, I have a very big role. You know, I'm the person that moves everyone. I'm the person that does all the things. I'm the person that, you know, sets everything up, beds down schooling, deals with all the issues. I am the project manager of our household, and my husband's life never really changes. He goes from one bedroom where all his shirts are in the cupboard and all his underwear's in the drawer to another bedroom where all his shirts are in his cupboard and his underwear's in the drawer. And he goes to a different office and, you know, he sees different people, whereas I'm the one who's sort of bedding down the whole life. And you know, it's at different times I've worked and different times I haven't worked. So, you know, it just makes me, I don't think it puts across my value add to the experience.
I agree.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, I agree. And I think most women who have moved in that circumstance feel the same way. And I had this conversation recently with Emma, who asked the question on the page, because I had one of the questions in the poll was, you know, did you move for your partner? Was your move motivated by your partner? And what I actually meant when I was saying that was, did your partner live overseas and you were moved, you know, you moved for them, which Emma very rightly pointed out to me, hey, I didn't think we were meant to say that. Like, I didn't think we were meant to say I moved because of my partner. And I agree, because I hate the sentence. I hate how it makes me feel if I ever say, oh, we moved for my husband's job. Because, yeah, it doesn't, the reaction you get too is also a very dismissive one from whoever you're talking to, because it just automatically rolls onto your partner, that your partner's the reason for everything in your life and that's why you exist, sort of thing. So, but what I wanted to do today, Nikki, because I've been thinking about it, is you've got to change the sentence. This is something I was talking about before, is like when people say, why do you live in, or what's it like living in Qatar? And I say, it's hot. Well, it makes it hard for the conversation to progress. Oh, and it's like, no shit, Sherlock, really? So I was thinking, we need to find our own sentence. We need to make our own sentence, you know. So why did you move to Jakarta? Why did you move to Libya? Why did you move to Qatar? And I was thinking my sentence would be, instead of saying we moved here for my husband's job, would be, we've been expats for about 18 years and I really love the lifestyle and the opportunities that it gives us. I work for an Australian company and I'm lucky enough to be able to do that work online. And then I don't have to say anything about him or his job or any of that. That's my answer because that's unique to me. Without putting you on the spot, Nikki, what would you say if someone said to you, what made you move to Germany?
Well, I have started trying to change my sentence and change my wording. So probably I'd say something like, it's part of our worldwide adventure. We started in Hong Kong in 2003 and we've been going ever since. And we're 5 continents into our amazing experience.
Then we always
talk about whether we're ever going to South America. So that's good. The conversation then goes down another path.
Yeah, and that's what I would love to hear from other people. So we have a nifty little thing on our website, twofatexpats.com. If you go to our website, you can click the little microphone button on the right-hand side and leave us a message. And I'd like to know, what is your sentence? What are you going to make your sentence? And I think if you needed a little template for how to make your sentence, you could just say, what made you choose to travel? And aside from anyone's job or anyone's situation, what made you choose to get on the plane? What do you like about being an expat? What do you enjoy the most about your current expat life? Maybe that. So, yeah, talk more about what you're doing in your current expat role that makes you choose to keep being an expat. Okay, onwards and upwards, Nikki.
I like it.
Podcasts. What have you been listening to?
Okay, so this week I've been listening to, well, I have been listening to Dirty John, which was your recommendation from last week, and I have really been enjoying it. Yeah. So, big fan. This week there's a hugely hyped new podcast that I've listened to the first couple of episodes of. It's called Deadly Manners, and it's a murder mystery. And it's like old school radio. So it's fictional. It sounds to me like a little bit like a real life game of Cluedo. You know, it was, you know, Professor Mustard in the dining room with the candlestick. So, but the cast is quite amazing. It's got Kristen Bell, who everyone knows who Kristen Bell is. Anna Chomsky from My Girl and Veep.
Yes.
Dennis O'Hare from True Blood. RuPaul. Timothy Simmons, who I didn't know who he was. I looked him up, and he's Jonah from Veep. I mean, I recognize his voice as soon as I heard it. And LeVar Burton is the narrator, and he's from an American PBS show, Kids Reading Rainbow. So he's sort of got this constant, very, very comforting sort of voice that just sort of rolls you through the narration.
Nice.
And I don't know if I like it.
Oh!
I listened to it because, you know, Starfield cast, huge, big murder mystery, a lot of marketing around it. And I don't know. I think, you know, one of the things I liked about Homecoming is it sounds very now and sort of it's gritty and it's, I don't know, it's very modern, I would say. Does that sound fair to you? Like Homecoming seems like what a radio show might be if it was today.
Yes.
This is very definitely old school. It's meant to be old school. You know, it's very overacted, like, oh my goodness, please serve the guests more champagne when we have, you know, someone dead in the floor. Right. It's all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. But the actors and actresses in it, I really enjoy them in their other parts. So I think I'll keep listening to it. But anyway, that's me for this week. So I've been listening to that. What about you on the podcast front?
I should just very quickly say, yes, that is the call to prayer that you can hear in the background. We always seem to hit the call to prayer when we're recording the podcast. I was going to say, that's the call to prayer, so I've got to go. But no, joking. So me, podcasts, I have two that I've mentioned before, but I just want to go back and tell people, go listen, if they are podcasts that float your boat. Don't Shoot the Messenger, I think I've talked about ad nauseum, and I love, because I love Carolyn Wilson, and yes, I'm a massive fangirl, and I think I'm getting worse. I'm actually liking her more and more every week that I listen. I think, oh, Kirsty, you really do like this woman a little bit too much.
I just love their friendship. I just think yes. It's such a lovely friendship podcast. You can just really hear that they've been friends for 40 years or however long it is. Like, it's yes. just, that's what I love most about it. And it's just so authentic, to use the word.
Yes, it is. And, you know, on that women's friendship thing, I think I've decided I might start this as of next week. I totally agree with you. And in particular, this episode, I think this is what really shines through, is because they have Carolyn's mother on the show, who is exactly how you want her to be. You know, you suddenly hear her and you go, ah, oh, well, that makes sense. You know, that's why she's who she is. She's got this amazing mother who's just, you know, wonderful. And the mother talks about the same things, and the favourite flower for the spring and the favourite recipe. And she's just as involved in the football, and she's, you know, entertaining and lovely and in love with her kids and her grandkids and all of that. You realise too that all the people within this podcast and the friends that they talk about, that they, their parents knew each other as well. But the thing I like about women's friendships, and I love the balance of Caro, that she can be so knee-deep in the world of football and come across as standing so tough on her opinions and thoughts in a male-dominated area, but then she still wants to share you her favorite recipe. She still talks about her favorite jacket. You know, she's so feminine in other ways. And before people crucify me for saying that cooking is feminine, that's not what I mean. I mean, she's not afraid to show her femininity, I guess. So yeah. But yes, I love the friendships and everything in it too. And episode 10, for the one that it's her mother, for the fact that if you're a football lover, they do go into Richmond winning the grand final, which was an incredibly emotional experience for all football fans, I think, on both sides. It was just a fantastic grand final. So that's one. But I've also talked about Ladies We Have to Talk with Yumi Steins, and how much I've enjoyed that, and how well produced that podcast is, Nikki, is just incredible. Yeah. But there was a particular episode about drinking that was on. Now, Yumi Steins is a regular on radio in Australia, and she was on TV as well, and she's very well known, I guess, for being quite effervescent and maybe a little bit brash sometimes, but funny, on point. And she talks about drinking and reveals, without too much of it, I don't think this is being a spoiler, because she says at the beginning that she's drinking cups of tea, but she kind of reveals the discovery of her own drinking problem. And there's a lot of interesting facts for women our age in this podcast, Nikki, about, you know, it's women who have children who are the biggest drinkers in society at the moment, which is so bizarre to think about. But it's the women who have suddenly maybe become a little bit more housebound And having a glass of wine is a great way to sort of turn off from the end of the day, put the kids to bed, have a glass of wine, and that release. And I know, Nikki, when I look at online and our online worlds, of how many memes and conversations of women my age revolve around drinking, you know, that a glass of wine will fix everything, or reaching for the gin, or doing whatever. Do you find that?
I do find that, and I think that's not necessarily our age. I think it comes sort of. I don't think it ever stops. I think it's just presented differently. You know, in your 20s, you drink, you go out, and you drink and have fun, whatever. And then if you're staying at home because you've got kids in your 30s, then you drink to get over your kids, and then you know, and it just sort of progresses. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I agree with what you're saying, but I don't think it's an anomaly. I think it's just a progression. I don't
Is
know.
it
Does
that
that make
that
sense?
in your 40s you realize that you have to slow down on drinking, and that's why it's noticeable? Although I have to say, if you look at the research, it does show that the biggest rise of drinkers are women in their 30s.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I haven't done the
Yeah.
research.
Yeah. Anyway, have a listen. I think it's a really interesting podcast on the culture of drinking. And this is very much too an Australian thing. I think you and I have had this conversation before, that our American friends don't appear to drink as much as our Australian friends, and definitely our European friends don't appear to drink as much as our Australian friends. I reckon our British friends would drink as much as us, though.
I'm not sure about European friends. I think European friends drink differently. I think,
Oh, in what way? Tell me.
well, I just think that, well, I don't know as much or differently. I think it's just a little bit different. I think that Australia and perhaps the UK, perhaps New Zealand, perhaps South Africa, we have a bit of a binge drinking culture and/or problem. Whereas we'll have a glass of wine sort of every day, or a couple of glasses of wine with dinner, but then, you know, we'll have 25 on the weekend, or when we're with friends, or whatever. So I think our European friends might have all those, but just without the
The
binge part of
binge.
it. I don't think that, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I
I don't
very
know.
much agree with that. And that's what's interesting in this podcast too, is they look at what is a glass of wine. Because I think we'd all be horrified if we saw what a real glass of wine is. Because the glass in the restaurant with the line on it, that isn't what is classed as a standard glass. As my friend Fiona said, the trouble with opening a bottle of wine is you just know that you're going to open another one and finish that as well. Anyway, last podcast that I want to talk about is it's ABC National podcast, and I'm talking about ABC in Australia. Sorry, I really need to go and find some more Brit and American podcasts. I'm going to do that next week. But last one is, Nikki, have you heard the story about Penguin Bloom? It was big about a year ago, this story, and I
No.
been late to adapt. So I think the first person I saw who shared it was my sister-in-law, but I reckon it was on Australian Story, and I'd read a little bit about it but didn't really get into it. I couldn't understand why it had become such a big deal. This is about has a different episode each week, and they're usually about the 25 to 30 minute mark, so really easy for a, you know, commute to work, or a school drop off, or a trip to the shops, and you can knock one off. But the one I really enjoyed was Penguin Bloom, which is the story of an Australian couple with kids. They've been together since they were, you know, 17. They're a very attractive sort of Northern Beaches, Sydney surfing kind of looking family, if that makes sense. If you want to get a picture in your eye, that blonde, tanned Aussie family. They go on a holiday to Thailand. The mother, Sam, was saying she really can remember one of the last things she was thinking was, does life get any better than this? They're at the beach, blue skies, beautiful water. They walk up some stairs to stand on the landing of somewhere to get better vantage point of the ocean. She's got her children with her and her husband Cameron, who's a fantastic photographer. She leans on the railing breaks, she falls and breaks her back. And it starts with this awfulness of something that I think all of us as travellers and families can identify with. Of the husband said he can just remember yelling out, "Fuck!" you know, I won't finish it because we don't have an explicit rating on the podcast, but looking down and seeing her just motionless on the ground, everybody running downstairs to her. She had blood sort of coming out of her mouth, and he rolled her on her side because of, you know, the blood coming out of her mouth, and saw this lump in her back and just thought, oh my gosh, you know, this is awful. Then they're all in an ambulance driving in 160 to get to the closest hospital that would be the best for her. The doctor doesn't necessarily speak a lot of English, and all they can get out is T6, T7, that they're both broken. And she goes from being a woman who was a surfer and highly active and really making the most out of life to being a woman who's paralyzed in a wheelchair. And they return home and it's miserable. And I just love the honesty of her, in that she said, you know, you see all these people who have these terrible situations in their life and they just bounce back and they take on life. And she said she didn't want to. She just wanted to die. And she was quite vocal with her husband about feeling like her life was over. And right when he was thinking, what am I going to do? I've lost my wife, because she just doesn't want to live. She doesn't want to be here. She's not enjoying life. She wasn't getting out of bed. She just hated everything. They found a magpie on, like a bird, on their balcony whose wing appeared to be broken. And she started to sort of nurse this magpie, and she could understand when it was in pain or when it was hungry or when it was angry or whatever. And she developed this relationship with this magpie, who are a wild bird in Australia. And this bird started to live within captivity in their home. And her husband is such a beautiful photographer that he started capturing all these beautiful photos of this bird with the family, that he started an Instagram account, which without them telling the story of the wife or any of that, they had over 110,000 Instagram followers just because it was such a beautiful story about this bird within their family. And so it's a great 30 minutes to tell you the story of them, and it's called Penguin Bloom. And there is a movie coming out about Penguin, which I think has Naomi Watts as Sam's character. And it's just, if you go to the website, if you go to penguinbloom.com, you'll see all of the beautiful photos. I'm pretty sure the photo book made its way to the New York Times, and it's just a really great, honest, raw story. Loved it. Nikki, screens, what have you been watching?
Screens. So this week I watched a new series called Liar. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay, so it's got Joanne Froggatt, who's Anna from Downton Abbey.
Yes, love her.
You may remember Anna. Yes, love her. And it's very interesting. So it's a story about a girl who's just broken up with her boyfriend, and someone asks her to go on a date. So they go on a date, and then she wakes up the next morning and the guy carries on with his day. He's a surgeon at the hospital. He works with her sister, who's a nurse, and she sort of set up the date, and then she accuses him of raping her. So it's so interesting because you don't ever see what happened. So you don't know who's lying. So that's the really interesting part of it. You know, in a normal TV show, you see what happens and then you see all the outcome. You think, oh, God, why? That's terrible that person's saying that, because that's not true. But in this situation, you really don't know what happened. So you don't know if she's saying something or if something wrong, or if he's saying something wrong.
I have seen shorts to this. Yes, I do know what you're talking about. That looks fantastic.
So it's an English show, and, you know, it's a little bit controversial because of the topic, but it's about, it makes you think about, it's very difficult for a woman to approve a sexual assault when it's her word against his word, and you don't see it, so you don't have any opinion on whether it happened or not, because you don't know. So you're looking at it from the point of view of anyone that's just hearing the story. Well, you know, I know that guy. He seems fine, you know, or I know her. Anyway, it's getting into, obviously, both of them have more troubled pasts than at first appear. So, and then it gets more complicated because, you know, if she's had mental health issues, does that mean we shouldn't believe her? Or, you know, and if he's, you know, his wife committed suicide, did she though? You know, and so it's just going down a rabbit hole, and it's quite It's quite good. I've enjoyed it. I've seen
and
the
what
first
are
two
you
episodes.
What are you watching it on? Is it a Netflix or is it an Apple or what is that?
I don't know. I'll put it on the show notes how I'm watching it. But I think you can watch it through BBC iView, but that's not how I'm watching it.
I have seen the shorts because I thought what it was so clever at doing in the shorts was you see them both answering the same question with almost the same answer, but just different. There's one or two words missing. So when she says he says she never once said to stop, and then she says I couldn't get him to stop or whatever. Like it's they're both sort of saying the same thing about the thing, and you see that they're on a date. They have this lovely first kiss. It all looks like it's going to be this romantic story, and it's so not. So I have seen the shorts and I definitely want to see that. Is it something that I could watch with Miss 15, Miss 17?
Yes, maybe. There's no actual sex. So there's no, you don't see any violence. Like it's a thriller. It's what really happened.
Oh yeah, so, I could definitely watch with him. Yeah.
So you could watch it with me.
Yes.
And the other thing I've been watching for a bit of sort of feel good, which I hadn't seen it and it's just started season two, is The Good Place with Kristen Bell and Ted Danson. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
It's called The Good Place and it's about someone who dies and goes to The Good Place. And it's a very funny story. It's about what happens in The Good Place and she shouldn't really be there. So she has to go through this whole process of I shouldn't be here, so what should happen? And anyway, it's funny. It's a comedy. It's a 30-minute one. I think it's on Netflix or Hulu, and it's worth a watch. That's a family one. Good for the family.
Yes. Now, I wanted to talk about a few apps. One of the things I'm using now to talk to the kids of Australia is Google Duo, which I use on my iPhone as an app. And all you need is your sort of Google account or you use your phone number and you can get rolling. And it's free, it's clear, it's legal, it's fantastic. I am using that to talk to them rather than using Skype or WhatsApp or any of those apps that aren't really working that well in Qatar right now. But my girlfriend called me the other day as well and we Google Duo'd, and so I would highly recommend that. For conference calls and catching up, I would highly recommend Zoom. We do a lot of video calling now for work where we'll have up to, you know, 6 or 7 people on a video conference, and Zoom has been yes. And for me, where it's 5 a.m., I sometimes opt out of the video side of the call just really for self-protection and to be kind to other staff members. But I would recommend Zoom as well. And for those of you, and Nikki, I'm going to put this on a 3-minute time frame now because I have talked about the fact that I'm doing the intermittent fasting and I've lost 5 kilos doing intermittent fasting. But I know that that's got nothing to do with the expat world. And I know that probably half of the people or 3/4 of the people listening to this don't give a rat's about intermittent fasting or how I lost 5 kilos. So this, we're going to put this on a 3-minute time frame. Let me just get my stopwatch out in front of me now and I will press go. Nikki, how are you going with your intermittent fasting?
Well, I would want to say I'm going okay in that I can do intermittent fasting. I don't get hungry anymore, but I just haven't lost 5 kilos like you have. It has had some other health benefits, though, I would say, and I don't know whether there's a lot of men that listen to this podcast or not. But I would have to say that I'm just going through my monthly cycle right now and I didn't have a lot of PMT. And every month I always have to also take painkillers that have codeine in them for 1 to 2 days, and I haven't had to take them at all this month. So I'd say that's a bonus.
Wow.
So the weight might not be falling off, but my body's certainly reacting in some kind of way.
Yes. And not to go into huge details, but intermittent fasting, a lot of people say a lot of the benefits aren't anything related to weight loss, that they are things like that. I know a lot of menopause or women say that intermittent fasting gets rid of their hot flushes, which would go in time with all the PMT stuff and everything else. I think, and I think I have to tell people this to be fair. So, Nikki, you're doing 16-8, right, where you fast for 16 hours, and they call it a window, that you open that window for that 8 hours. So you will fast from, you know, 8 at night until maybe midday the next day, and there's your 16 hours. But then you open the window for 8 hours where you're allowed to eat, and then fast again. So what I have done, which has, I think, really kicked off the weight loss, was I did the 16-8 for the first few weeks, and I found the fasting easier. Like you, I suddenly noticed, hey, I'm not really getting hungry at all, and suddenly my 16 hours would go to 18 hours and then 19 hours and then 20, because I was thinking, I'm just not hungry. It was almost like the further it went, the less hungry I got. So I decided with that I would try the 5-2, which is where there's 5 days that you are eating whatever you like, two whole days where you're fasting. So I now am trying to fast for 2 days. So I did my first week of it this week. I chose Sunday, Tuesday, where I fasted all day, and I did a clean fast, which is where you just coffee, tea, water. That's it. And other people choose 500 or 800 calories within that day. I find not to eat at all means that I just don't get hungry. The minute I kind of break it with something, I'm hungry. So I have done that, and I'm sure that that's what has kicked me off, you know, to lose that weight that I've got to 5 kilos. So Nikki, that is 2 minutes and 52 seconds. Do you think we've covered enough on intermittent fasting?
I think it's good. Nice.
Okay. So yeah, I think that's it. The other two, that's what got me on. I have two apps that are related to intermittent fasting if people need them. Zero will time your fast. Carb Manager, you can put in what you've eaten. Sorry, that's it. There's those 10 seconds.
Okay, one last thing. We're just going to make an announcement. So it came up in the group this morning. The question was, now we've had it scheduled for some time. We originally were going to go in April and we had to change to October. Kirsty, we had a booking for a big fat expat meetup in Dubai, but we're unable to do that. And Kirsty, can you explain why we can't do that?
Because they won't let me come to Dubai anymore. So due to our current political situation in Qatar, which you would never ever know was happening unless you needed to fly to Dubai. But for me to go to Dubai at the moment, I'd have to be a bit cheeky and fly to another country and go in via another country. So it would be not only would turn a 1 hour flight probably into a 7 to 9 hour exercise, it would also be incredibly expensive. And Nikki, we fund our own trips for these big fat expat meetups because we don't.
That's right.
We try and keep ticket prices really, really low, and it really is just meant to be a big get together. There's no reason why people can't do a fat expat meetup together, and then as soon as we sort of know what we're doing, we can jump in and come and do what we do, which is usually I do a reading, something very for kids, 20 suitcases and a beagle. I nearly forgot the name of my own blog. That's how long it's been since I've written. So usually I might do a reading, or, you know, you and I will do a live podcast or something like that. We will get there. We will get back to Dubai. We just need to wait for this to sort of settle first.
All right. So if you could leave us a review on iTunes, because we haven't had one for ages and we feel very sad and we really need our selves validated through other people. Even if it's a hater, you know, like, we don't have any haters, so, you know, bring it. No, we'd love you to leave us a review on iTunes. Also, we'd also love you to go to the website www.twofatexpats.com and leave us your message of your sentence about what you would say about becoming an expat.
Yes, and we'll see you over in the Facebook group on Two Fat Expats on Facebook.
Okay, speak to you next week.
See you next week.